Jesus said, "Therefore, whatever you want men to do to you, do also to them, for this is the law and the prophets." Dave made a point in class not too many weeks ago about how we call this the golden rule. The Bible doesn't call it that. We call it that. But why not? It says that, "For this is the law and the prophets." It's an important teaching of Christ. And I'll just tell you that it is important in the fact of what it can do for us in our everyday relationships. But before I can know how to treat other people by way of thinking, before I can know how what to treat them, I need to ask some questions to myself, some honest questions. What do I like? What pleases me? What encourages me? And just continue from a negative standpoint. What discourages me? What is hurtful to me? What do I not like? Sometimes it's good just to ask ourselves those simple questions and to have some real honest answers. And then that'll help you to know kind of how to teach and treat other people. I'm thinking about a number of relationships that could just be, if not solved, help so much if we would apply this rule. Think about just the family. Can you imagine how many times things could be worked out in a better way in the family if we'd honestly apply that rule? We have a tendency to kind of extol the teaching of Christ and maybe to write it in calligraphy and hang it on our walls, but maybe not understand what it really means. And if we understand it, maybe not take it seriously. Think about the church problems that could be eased if we really took this seriously. Think about the problems at work that could be made much, much better. I had a friend that worked at a place, and he was just obsessed with a supervisor. I mean, you could mention the man's name during lunch, and he'd just almost get red. He just all upset. And I thought about that many times, that he could take a trip around the world, and you could mention that man's name, he'd still get upset. He was in bondage to him. He hadn't been practicing what Jesus said. And we want to talk about that tonight and make some practical applications, because I'm a believer in doing that with the Bible. I mean, if you just come and we just talk about some beautiful, magnificent things, but we never bring it down to where we live, where we work, and where we go to school and all that, then really what good is that? And so we want to do that. Before we do that, I just want to look with you at some philosophies that men have lived with through the years. And you'll recognize some of these as being rather modern philosophies, but I'm here to tell you tonight, they're not necessarily modern. A lot of these go back as long as man goes back. And so I want you to think with me as we look at them. You might not call them this through the ages, but they're the same type of philosophies. I hope you'll allow me to use that terminology. The Playboy philosophy. The basic idea is, you know, if it feels good, do it. And you'd be surprised at how many people just kind of live their lives that way. The idea that, well, I'm not hurting anybody. I mean, why can't you leave me alone? If you think it's sin, that's your business. But I'm not hurting you. Why can't you leave me alone? Let me just tell you, and I want you to think carefully about this. It is never right that you don't hurt somebody when you sin. First of all, you hurt yourself. And second of all, of course, you hurt God. Think with me about King David. I tell you, he's been used a lot, hasn't he? And I think sometimes we use him as that bad example so much we forget what a good example he was. But David, remember with his sin with Bathsheba, where he took another man's wife, and he took her, committed adultery with her, and she was pregnant by him. And then to try to hide his sin, he had her husband put to death. And it looked like it was all covered up until God sent the prophet, and the prophet said, "You are the man." After he told a very moving story to David. David had hurt so many people. He had hurt himself. He had hurt his family, as you can see in the way the family acted. I'm convinced that had a devastating effect on his family. He had hurt Israel because, after all, he was the king. He had hurt, of course, more importantly, God. And you can see that when he wrote, "Against thee and thee only have I sinned, O God." He never forgot that. I think about those who practice homosexuality. And my mother reminded me years ago, you know, we must not hate the sinner. I don't care if it is homosexuality that they're practicing. We must never find ourselves being in a kind of an attitude towards sinners. I don't want to touch them. I don't want to be around them. Because even though they're in sin, We can hate that. We want to bring them back. The playboy philosophy is not one that you should live by. And I'll tell you, if you live a little while and you keep your eyes open, you'll see that it is not the philosophy to live by. Then there's the philosophy of might makes right, simply put. If I have a bigger stick than you and you've got something I want, I'll just get it. I'll just beat you up and take it. In Europe in the 19th century, it was called Realpolitik, real politics. And I tell you, there was a German chancellor named Otto von Bismarck he had that perfected. He would, through diplomacy and wars, and he wouldn't fight unless he knew he had all the guns. I mean, he knew he could beat you. But by using diplomacy and his armies, he rode a wave for a long time there in Germany, about two decades. The idea, if I can take it, then that's right. And you know yourself, that's been used by a lot of people throughout history. Hitler was basically using that philosophy. But let me show you how it is not a modern thing. Look at Micah. Turn to the book of Micah with me for a moment. This is not as well known of a passage, at least not to some, I'm sure. But it really points out what happens when a person is thinking, I want that, and they begin to plan to take it, and if they can take it, they do it. I want to look at Micah chapter 2 and verse 1, please. I'm going to begin there. Micah chapter 2 and verse 1. Woe to those who devise iniquity and work out evil on their beds. At morning light they practice it, because it is in the power of their hand. They covet fields and take them by violence, also houses, and seize them. So they oppress a man and his house, a man and his inheritance. Here's somebody at night, and they're thinking about some field or some possession of a neighbor, and they're thinking, how can I get that? Well, do I have the means? Do I have the power? Do I have the way to do that? Okay. Then I'll get it. And when it's light, when they can do it, they do it. And they justify that by saying, I had the way, the means. I think you'll learn when you study the Bible even a little bit that that's not the philosophy God wants us to live by. And then there is the idea that legal is right. It may not be ethical, but if I can get this widow's house over here through legal means, it's mine, it's legal. You ever talk with somebody about abortion in a high school class or maybe even earlier classes? Or maybe at lunch where you work and you talk about it and banter about it, and inevitably somebody will say, well, the Supreme Court has judged that the unborn child to a certain age or a certain time period is not a human being in any meaningful sense. Something, I don't know if I got the right wording, but that's what it means. And somebody will always say, well, the Supreme Court has said. I love that. But the Supreme Court is a final word on all things. Somebody mentioned Nebuchadnezzar today. I believe Dave did in his class. I tell you what, while he was strutting down his palace corridors talking about how great he was and what he had built and about his glory and majesty, God took his mind away from him and he ate like a beast the grass in the field. His hair became like eagle's feathers, and his fingernails grew out like claws. I tell you what he learned. God sets up kingdoms, and God takes down kingdoms, and I don't care who Supreme Court rules what or how. They better understand that there's a higher law than that. And this idea that just so we can do it legally, well, that's right, is not right. And we need to recognize that's not a good way to live. And then there's the idea that, well, you just don't get involved. A lot of people live by this, you know. Well, it doesn't affect me. I really don't see that, you know. Hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil. That's not any of my business, you know. Is that what we read in the Bible? That is pleasing to God? Do you suppose that the priest and the Levite walked by that man who'd been beaten up on the side of the road? The priest looked at him, walked on by, and the Bible does say the Levite went over and looked at him and then passed by. Do you think it's possible they could have been partly living by this credo? That's none of my business, you know. I'm not really. I've got to get down there and do some church work. A lot of people live by that rule. And then there are those that treat people in the way that they're treated by those people. In other words, if somebody is nice to them, then they're nice right back. Now, there is something to commend that in the fact that you're trying to be nice. But Jesus pointed out in Matthew 5:44, Luke 6:31-34, what he basically said was, if what you do is you're only good to people that are good to you, to put it in modern lingo, big deal. Even people of the world are nice to people, as a general rule, that are nice to them. You're supposed to be something different. We're supposed to act in a way that causes people to sit up and take notice. Now, why are they like that? That's different. That's strange. You see, one of the reasons that this is not a good thing to live by is it's just a short step from here to I'm bad to people that are bad to me. And we know that's not right. And then finally, what you don't do to others what you don't want done to you. Now, think about that a minute. That's really a pretty good philosophy, except what it does, it states negatively what Jesus stated in Matthew 7:12, positively. What Jesus said is, what you want men to do to you, you do that to them. And I'll tell you something. That's a challenging philosophy. But it is one that is really a beautiful philosophy. And I want to bring up this chart to make some applications with you as we work on the latter part of this lesson. Let's apply the rule. Let's get it to where we live. We're to do unto others as we would like for them to do unto us. That's paraphrasing. Toward our fellow men. Who's a fellow man? Well, it's an interesting question, isn't it? Similar to what the lawyer that asked Jesus in Luke chapter 10, you remember I referred to the parable of the Good Samaritan, and Jesus told him about the neighbor, you remember, to love your neighbor, yourself, and that sort of thing. And he said, Lord, who is my neighbor? And if you remember that story, what Jesus actually does is he says, you are a neighbor. You're going to be a neighbor. Don't just look for somebody as a neighbor. You be like that Samaritan was. Your neighbor is anybody you see in the grocery store, you drive next to, and you're going to find out. Of course, you won't find out for about 5 more months because I've been restricted by the doctor from driving. So you're a lot safer than you realize. You're sitting there not even recognizing how safe you are compared to what you could be. But you think about this idea of people you're with at work and around in school. Those are your neighbors. To be kind and courteous. You know, when I go into a person's home, how would you like to be treated? When you go into their home, do you want them maybe not talk to you and go over and sit in a corner and read a book? Not say anything to you? I've said this many times. I don't know how many of you have seen this. It used to be people would stand out and sometimes still do at the church building. And here comes a visitor up. And they watch him as they get out of the car. As they go in, you know. I mean, does that make you feel welcome, warm and fuzzy and all that? Do you want to do that or be done that way? Then don't do others that way. And don't run behind the west just the way I am. You know. Why is Sister So-and-so, why is Brother So-and-so act rudely and do this? Well, that's just the way they are. And somehow we just, okay. What does that mean? Are we genetically designed to just be rude and discourteous? Well, it may be easier for some than others, but we are to seek to be friendly and courteous and good because, what? We want people to do us that way. And I've had people treat me in such good ways, even in other countries. And frankly, I've had people treat me pretty badly. But I'll tell you which one I'd prefer, and therefore I know which one I should do. As far as doing unto others. Let me talk to you also about being talked about. You ever heard of gossip, spreading rumors? Now, I know none of you have ever done that, so this is just kind of theoretical. But I don't want people talking about me. And I don't want people going around, and as Bobby has said, even if it's true, and I tell you, there are some true things you can say about me that I'm not really proud about. But you don't necessarily need to say them. Unless it can really help me or profit me in some way. I want you to think about that. Next time somebody says, did you hear about so-and-so? Do you know about? You could do like one Christian woman did when a rumor was being fanned around in the area, and she knew this particular man that was being talked about. She said, no, or rather she said, yes, I heard about that, and there's not a word of truth in it. Sometimes it's not enough just not to pass them on. Sometimes we need to stand up and say, wait a minute, I know something about that. That's not so. When you want somebody to do that for you, do it for somebody else. I don't want somebody to embarrass me. You ever been really embarrassed? Now, let me put a little disclaimer on here. I haven't been embarrassed a lot. I like to kid around with people. You don't know me as well right now. You will learn. I probably shouldn't tell you that so I can get you before you get me. But I like to kid and to play. And so you'll understand that I'm not saying it's wrong to joke around and to have some fun. But I want us all to be aware of the fact that if we kind of have hard feelings towards someone or we're maybe envious, sometimes we can load our jokes with little barbs. If somebody says something, we say, oh, I was just joking. Yeah. But in your heart of hearts, you may know that kind of gives you a little bit of pleasure to see them kind of turn red, really get embarrassed. Because in your heart, you're having problems with them personally. A preacher friend of mine was preaching years ago at a congregation. And in the congregation, there was a small group. There was led by this one young man. And believe this or not, he would sit in the audience. In fact, this one Sunday morning, he sat a little ways back in the auditorium while this preacher was preaching the lesson. And he would make faces, and he would look around, and they'd laugh, and cut up, and laugh. And on the way out that night, he walked by the preacher, and the preacher took his hand and said, you know, John, that really made me feel bad. That really discouraged me. And I'll tell you, it was hard for me to think with all that going on. And I know it bothered a lot of people. He said, oh, he said, you know I love you. He said, no, you don't love me. He said, well, can you read minds? How do you know I don't love you? He said, because 1 Corinthians 13, verses 4 and 5 says that love doesn't behave itself rudely. Love does not parade itself. And he said, let me tell you something. What you were doing this morning was rudely, rude. It was parading yourself. It was not love. And you know in your heart right now, you don't want people doing you that way. Don't do other people that way. Sometimes it's just, you just feel compelled, and sometimes that envy may just be down there festering a little bit. You may not even be as aware of it as you should be. But think about it. We do have an obligation to think about our heart, to guard our hearts, and to prepare our hearts. And I'll tell you, I'm not, and you'll find this out, I'm not just preaching to you. I'm preaching to me, and I mean that sincerely. I don't want people treating me odd because I'm from Alabama. I don't want them treating me odd because of the way I talk. I had a friend that went out to the Northwest, a skiing trip one time, and there was a man out there from some part of the world. And he said, say, I've been all over the world and heard people, all kinds of accents and languages. He said, I've never heard yours. Where are you from? He explained, from the South. That's just the way people talk. That's their draw. And the man wasn't ugly, but I'll tell you, there have been times where people have kind of looked down and cast me down. I don't like that. Do you like that? Then you have a responsibility to act toward them in a way that you'd like to be treated, even if they're not particularly kind to you, especially at the beginning. I said this earlier, and I just want to touch this right now. I want my wife and my children to respect me. And I don't want them just to respect me because they're afraid of me. I do think there needs to be kind of a type of, if you know how the Bible uses fear, a kind of respect for a father and mother from the children. I do believe that. But I'm here to tell you tonight that if I want my wife to respect me and my children to respect me, I must respect them too. I must treat them in a way that's kind and respectful, and I don't always do that. But that's the way I ought to do it. I want my wife to trust me. I want my wife to respect me. But I've got to do that to her then. I need to. Since I want that from her, that's what I'd like, the way I'd like to be treated, I've got to do that. I had a man tell me one time, and he was in his 60s. He was retired, late 60s. He told me, he said, my wife, you cannot believe how she does me. He said, let me tell you, something happened the other day. He said, she walked out to go to the hairdresser or something, and she came back later. And then 2 days after that, she said to me, who were you talking to? He says, pardon me? She said, 2 days ago, when I came back from the hairdresser, I noticed the phone cord was in a different configuration than when I left. I know you were using that telephone. Were you talking to your mistress? He said, all I want to do is grow older and enjoy my grandchildren. He said, that really is all I want to do. But my wife is just so suspicious. Well, I don't want to live like that. Do you? Then we need to think about that as we deal. And frankly, my wife has a right to know where I am. I accept it. And I have a right to know where she is. I know that. But what I'm saying is we don't want to be treated like we're just on a leash. Nobody wants that. And then finally, when it comes to the church, you know, a lot of problems that arise. I said this in the introduction. A lot of problems that arise could have been, to some degree, headed off if people had taken seriously what Jesus said in Matthew 7, verse 12. There are just a lot of different things that go on that we need to think about. How do you want people to treat your conscience? Things you feel. Now, Dave made a point this morning I think was a good point, that we all have an idea of what we think is right and faithful. I mean, everybody's got to make those judgments. You do. We don't have a creed book that tells us what we do and what we... This is our creed book. But we all have to make those decisions, and I'll tell you, there are some decisions you may make that I may not agree with, and the same this way. I'm not making light of the truth at all. But I'm saying there has to be some forbearance and understanding for us to be right toward one another. And you know, sometimes I may draw the line in a particular matter of judgment a little bit closer, a little bit more strictly than you would. But I don't want somebody treating me like I'm some kind of a hick or something. Unintelligent person. Do you want that? Sometimes we act like, I think I've known times, and I think there have been times where I've been close to this, where I've wanted to say, well, that's their problem. They've got that conviction, they'll just have to live with that. Well, that's not all their problem. And do you want people responding to you that way? Turn with me, 1 Corinthians 8. This is a great passage, and it's one that I think needs to be understood a little better. Now, as you're turning, let me just kind of set it up. There were some brethren that believed they shouldn't eat certain meat or sacrifice to idols. And there were some brethren that knew it was okay to eat. But he was just saying, don't buy your liberty by being able to eat this meat. Don't you cause a weaker conscience to be defiled by causing that weaker conscience to participate in something that hurts. I'm in verse 7. 1 Corinthians 8 and verse 7. However, there is not in everyone that knowledge. For some with consciousness of the idol until now eat it as a thing offered to an idol, and their conscience being weak is defiled. But food does not commend us to God. For neither if we eat are we the better, nor if we do not eat are we the worse. But beware lest somehow this liberty of yours become a stumbling block to those who are weak. For if anyone sees you who have knowledge eating in an idol's temple, will not the conscience of him who is weak be emboldened to eat those things offered to idols? And because of your knowledge shall the weak brother perish for whom Christ died. But when you thus sin against the brethren and wound their weak conscience, you sin against Christ. Therefore, if food makes my brother stumble, I will never again eat meat lest I make my brother stumble. Here's a brother eating some meat, and the guy says, I can't do that. I just think, oh, come on. Don't be so silly. Here's a brother with a weak conscience, and I suppose it's okay. A friend of mine said when he was a boy, his mother knew that he climbed. There's a great climbing tree out behind the house. Y'all know what that means? Some of you do. Great climbing tree. And the next door neighbor and he loved to climb this tree. The mother called him over one day and said, Steve, I know you can climb that tree. I've seen you do it many times. And the fellow next door, but she said, you know your little brother who just idolizes you. He just wants to walk in your steps and to be like you. You know that if he sees you climbing that tree, you know he's going to climb the tree. He's going to try. I don't think he can, Steve. And I'm afraid he's going to fall and break his arm or worse. Steve, love your brother. At least when he's around, don't climb the tree. Not that it's wrong, but to help your brother. And I'll tell you, we need to think that way. And I like it when people treat me. I think there have been times where people have just respected my feelings about things. And that makes me feel good. And therefore, why can't I do that? Why shouldn't I do that? I want brethren, when I'm in sin, to restore me. Have you ever thought about that's one of the most important things about love? A lot of people want the good, warm, and fuzzy stuff about love. But one of the great things about love is that if I see you going away that's going to destroy you or hurt you, I'm going to come to you and try to restore you. Galatians 6, verse 1, I'm to do it in the spirit of meekness, and that's what I want. 2 Timothy 2, 24-26 talks about how we ought to try to draw the person back from the devil in a kind of kind way to the best we can. Don't you want that? I want to ask you to do me a favor. I said this at every place I've been at, and I want you to know I mean this. If you catch me in sin or if I'm off somewhere involved in something, please, I'm asking you. Don't just kind of shut the door behind me and say, well, I guess he's chosen to live in sin. That's tough. Well, bye-bye. Good luck. I'm asking you right now, please, love me more than that. And if I have to bump my head on a windowsill, pulling me out of a burning house, pull me out! Don't let me just be charred! And that's one of the most fundamental things that I think is wrong with some of the philosophies. I'm not saying that they're done with any bad motives, but I think that's fundamentally wrong. I think that we have a responsibility to one another as brothers and sisters, and I want you to do that. And incidentally, I'm going to try to do that to you. I'm telling you now. But not because I dislike you, or don't look, but because I love you. I want you to give me the benefit of the doubt. I want you to forgive me. I've got to learn to do that too. One of the hardest things in the world to do is to forgive and forget. Now, we say that a lot. Well, I'll forgive you, but I won't forget it. No, we may not say that a lot, but I have heard people that have said that. And it's not easy always to forget. But there is a sense that you can cut away from that emotional pain of the situation, and you can, in a very real sense, forget it. I think that there have been times where I've had to struggle with that harder than at other times, but I know there have been people that have hurt me in the past. We have been reconciled, and I love those people dearly today. I just can't believe a family can make it very long if they hold things against each other and will not forgive one another. Do you really? Every family has troubles. Some are more obvious than others, but every family, they have disagreements, they have all kinds of things they have to work out, and that's true of the church family too. I wonder sometime if the biggest frustration that the Lord has, or one of the biggest in dealing with us, is just trying to get us to take seriously the things that He's told us He wants from us. To be like Him, to be like His Son. And if we could, genuinely now, if I could treat you in a way that I'd really like to be treated, give you the benefit of the doubt, kind of make some allowances to you, you know? And I want to just say right now that if you'll kind of, and I don't mean overlook sin in my life, I've already made that clear, but if you'll kind of help me with some of my weaknesses and won't act like I'm the biggest sinner that ever walked this side of the Mississippi and treat me with kindness, I'll tell you, I'll do you the same way. Even if I think you're in sin, I'll try to come to you in the spirit of meekness and kindness. Now, I'll do that even if you don't. But what I'm saying is, let's do that to one another. Sure is easy to talk. My mother had an expression, you'll hear me use this a lot. When I was at home, she'd say, David, I want you to take the garbage. Oh, Mom, I don't want to take it. Okay, you just don't love me. He always played dirty like that. Oh, yeah, I do love you, I do love you. Actions speak louder than words. Oh, she had that, you know, that comeback. Okay, I'll go get the garbage and take it, you know. But that's really true. Perhaps you heard of the story of the old gentleman that came in the big arena, and there were all people in the stands as they were looking at the athletic competition going on. And this man made his way around by some Athenians, and they were trying to look, and nobody gave him their seat or was concerned about the old man at all. He walks around, and he comes around to where a section of Spartans are sitting, and as one man, they just rise up to give the man their seat. And all the arena broke out in applause, and oh, everybody was just thinking that was the greatest act of courteousness. It was wonderful. And as the applause kind of died down, the old man said, "Yes, yes. The Athenians admire courtesy, but the Spartans practice it." That's right. And I will say to you tonight, sometimes you don't need to walk down an aisle. Sometimes you do, maybe. Sometimes what you need to do is go to a person that has sinned against you, or maybe you against them, and get that right. You know, well, it's been 20 years, you know, and the Lord hadn't forgotten about anything. And 20 years is nothing to Him. One thing takes away sin. One thing. That's the blood of Jesus Christ applied in the way that He is said to apply. Jesus said, "He that believes and is baptized shall be saved. He that believes not shall be condemned." May I urge you to please think about that tonight. And if you're not right with someone here, get right. You may just need to go home and have a prayer and a recommitment. Do that. Or come while we stand and sing.